Afternoon, everyone. A pleasure to be here and to talk about this project and some of our results as we've been moving forward. We've been fortunate to be presenting on DREAM since its inception in 2007. We presented results of the formative study and our pilot, and now here are some of the preliminary results from our full intervention. I have no relationships to disclose. So this is just an overview of what I'm going to be presenting today. I'm going to start off with some background on the topic and then give you an overview of the DREAM project and what we do. I'll go on to describe our study design methods and then show some of our results to date. The intervention is still ongoing, but we've had some positive results to report on, and then I'm going to go on to our conclusions and our next steps. So just a little bit of background on the Bangladeshi community in the United States and New York City. Bangladeshis are one of the fastest growing Asian American subgroups in the United States as a whole, and the fastest growing subgroup in the New York City region. Since the 2000 to 2010 census, this community experienced a growth rate of close to 300%. This community experiences various unique social and economic barriers that contribute to their health disparities. For example, 54% of Bangladeshis have limited English proficiency, about a third of the community lives in poverty, and the majority of this community is foreign-born. In terms of diabetes in the Bangladeshi community, we know from data from the home country that Bangladesh is one of the top 10 countries estimated to have the highest cases of diabetes worldwide by 2030. It's estimated that Bangladesh will be in the top seven or so by that time. In terms of what we know about diabetes prevalence among Bangladeshis in the U.S., there's very little. There's growing evidence that diabetes is a major issue in the South Asian community in the United States, but there are really few studies documenting prevalence in the Bangladeshi community. However, we do know from studies on immigrant Bangladeshis in the UK and Canada that they report higher rates of diabetes compared to the general population. And there have been a couple of community-based studies, including ours, which was based on our formative needs assessment, that have found rates of diabetes ranging between 20 to 25% among Bangladeshi immigrants. So we established the DREAM Project, which stands for Diabetes Research, Education, and Action for Minorities, to address this health disparity in this growing community. And these are our project aims. This is a community-based participatory research project, and we really built upon an existing collaboration that we had between academic institution health providers and community-based organizations to implement a CHW intervention to address diabetes management. Another aim of our study was to examine trends and risk factors and patient outcomes among Bangladeshis diagnosed with diabetes in the New York City public hospital system, which was a key partner in our study, and to utilize the results of this formative study to develop, implement, and assess the efficacy of a CHW intervention designed to improve diabetes management. So this is a little different than CLEAR study earlier in that we really focused on management of individuals with uncontrolled diabetes. So because this is a CBPR project, we have a very active project coalition that consists of healthcare providers, healthcare institutions, and several community-based organizations that serve the Bangladeshi community in New York City. The South Asian community in general, and the Bangladeshi community in particular, is a little unique in New York City in that there are really no social service agencies or federally qualified health centers, for example, that serve this community in particular. So we really reach out to and work with a diverse range of partners, including the ethnic media, cultural organizations, workers groups, and other groups that serve this community. So those of you who do this work know that having a really great team is just invaluable and critical to these types of projects. So these are really the folks that move the ship along. I'm just kind of along for the ride, really. But these are our community health workers, Gulnahar Alam, MD Tahir, and Mamnoon Hawk, and Ms. Lindsay Riley, who coordinates the project and is actually in the room today. But yeah, they really make things happen. So in terms of our formative study, there were several phases to our study. The DREAM Project is part of a larger center called the Center for the Study of Asian American Health. As part of that center, we did a needs assessment in 10 different Asian American communities and found rate of about 17 to 20% of diabetes in the South Asian community. We did it in several South Asian communities in New York City. We also did an audit of the Bellevue Hospital patient registry. Bellevue Hospital is the New York City's largest municipal hospital and actually sees a large Bangladeshi population, and found that about 20% of Bangladeshi patients within Bellevue Hospital had type 2 diabetes. And then we followed this study up with our own mixed methods, qualitative, quantitative, formative study, where we did a series of 6 focus groups along with a community survey to better understand the community's perception of diabetes, knowledge and beliefs around the disease, what are their cultural beliefs around food, around social gatherings. Many of the issues that Claire raised are very similar in this community, and so that was really a topic. We had some very similar topics in the focus groups, and that really guided how we translated the curriculum and tailored the curriculum for this community. So in terms of our study design, our eligibility criteria includes being a Bangladeshi New York City resident between ages 25 and 85 and having a confirmed hemoglobin A1C of greater than 6.5. And we do use a slightly lower eligibility criteria. And that was really a result of feedback from our community partners who really felt like it was important to spread this project as widely as possible, given that it's really one of the first studies targeting this community in the United States. Participants cannot be pregnant on renal dialysis or have a coronary event in the last year or so. So in terms of our design, this was a randomized control design. Participants were randomized into a treatment and control group, and our treatment group received 5 monthly group educational sessions and 2 one-on-one visits with a community health worker. And the one-on-one visits were designed to be home visits, but through our pilot intervention, we found that it was better to be flexible with that. So for women, they really preferred one-on-one home visits, but men oftentimes preferred visits that could be done at their work or while they were waiting in the clinic or other areas that might be more convenient. We do have a waitlist control group that receives the first introductory session, and after the 6-month study period concludes, they're invited to attend the full intervention. In terms of recruitment strategies, we have a sort of a multi-pronged, diverse method of recruitment. This has primarily been a clinic-based intervention, and I'll go on to talk about how we're expanding upon that, as well as some of the reasons why it was important to do that. But in terms of our clinic-based recruitment, we did tabling at healthcare settings. For example, in Bellevue Hospital, we set up a table in the atrium and had language and materials and signage in Bengali so that interested participants could come and get information. One of our most successful recruitment methods was doing a strategic mailing and phone follow-up working with the Bellevue Hospital Clinic. We did direct mailings to eligible individuals, and our community health workers followed up with those individuals. We had direct provider referrals. Partnership with the media was really critical for us in getting the word out about the project. And another very successful technique, particularly as the project moves forward, has been referrals from past participants who participated in the program. This is just some of the examples of some pictures of our tabling, of the ethnic media that we've placed, and of the mailing that goes out. One side is in English and the other is in Bengali. Oops, I think I went the wrong way. This is an overview of our curriculum. I'm not going to spend time today talking about how we translated it, but there were elements of Power to Prevent that were incorporated into it, as well as Michigan University Diabetes Self-Management Program curriculum, and then a curriculum that's based out of Bangladesh from the Bangladesh Institute on Diabetes Research. And we integrated elements of that curriculum into this as well. So this is essentially what our group educational sessions go over. The first is sort of an intro to diabetes. The second session focuses on nutrition. The third session on physical activity. The fourth on complications of diabetes. And the fifth on stress management and family support. We realize that this is a lower number of sessions that compared to many of the DPP programs or other management programs. But one of the things that came across quite clearly from the focus groups in our formative study is that it's really difficult for participants to come back to multiple sessions. So our sessions are actually longer. They range between 2 to 3 hours. And we actually incorporate data collection into some of our sessions as well, because I think partially because of the urban setting that New York City is, it's very difficult for participants to come back repeatedly for multiple sessions. So this gives you a sense of our timeline. We started with our pilot in 2010. And we're right now implementing our third cohort. So I'm going to be presenting results on our first and second cohort. And again, this is still preliminary data, but we felt that it was worth sharing. Over the kind of trajectory of the project, we've gone through various aspects of partnership development as well. When we first started the project, it really emerged out of a partnership between NYU and Bellevue Hospital, which is part of the HHC system in New York City. And so our focus was really working on implementing this clinic-based intervention. In our second cohort, we expanded to other community health centers that were serving the Bangladeshi community based in the Bronx, as well as in Long Island City and Queens. And we've just recently began working with a network of community providers that see large numbers of Bangladeshi patients. We've started in Brooklyn and have kind of put out feelers to some physicians in Queens and other areas as well. And we, you know, through our partnership development, other community-based organizations, including faith-based organizations, have really expressed an interest in participating in the project. So we're beginning our partnerships with that group as well. This is just an overview of kind of the many steps that go along with doing a CBPR project, and some of the unique challenges and considerations in conducting a study on diabetes management. I think one of the things that was a huge challenge to us in the beginning, and definitely always a consideration for us in partnering, is that to assess the impact of this program, in particular on diabetes management, having those clinical data points is really critical. And you know, someone raised a question earlier about why A1C wasn't collected. It's incredibly resource intensive. So unless you have, you know, a really good connection and system in place to a clinic setting or a provider setting, we found that it's really difficult to make sure we can assess the program effectively. So I'm going to move on to share some of our results. This is an overview of our recruitment and retention. And we're really pleased that we've had quite good retention through the project. This gives you an overview of our the percentage of participants that receive the intervention allocation across cohort one and cohort two. And in general, we've defined completion of intervention as attending four sessions and receiving at least one of the one-on-one visits. And we've been able to, at least 77% of our participants have received that portion of the intervention. And we've also had similar successes in terms of retention for data collection. This includes both our survey data as well as our clinical data. The survey data, our team collects themselves along with, you know, our team of volunteers and our coalition. The clinical data, again, this is we really had to set up a system with the hospitals that we work with to send participants to receive their clinical follow-up points. So we've really been able to work out a system where we've been able to have pretty good retention. This is just an overview of some of the demographics based on our baseline findings. And I'm just going to skim over this, but really our treatment and control groups are very comparable. We have a slightly higher percentage of male participants in our program. The age ranges are quite similar across the groups. And we also were happy to see that our treatment and control groups are comparable in terms of acculturation, in terms of how long they've been here in the U.S., as well as their English-speaking proficiency. And we do know that, you know, this is a highly limited English proficient population. So moving on to some of our results, this slide shows some of the behavior change results that we found. We did see significant improvements in self-reported engagement and physical activity, both across the treatment and control group, although in the treatment group we did see much higher rates at follow-up. Some other examples of behavior change in terms of meal preparation. This finding looks at how often do you fry foods while cooking or eating. And we can see that in the treatment group there were much lower levels at follow-up. We saw some great improvements in terms of knowledge of A1C, again, both in the treatment and control group, but in the treatment group, we saw much higher levels of awareness of hemoglobin A1C, which is a really important indicator of diabetes management. We also made a point, again, in working with our community partners and in working from a theoretical model that really placed CHWs within this context of providing and facilitating social support and self-efficacy and social capital. We have quite a few measures integrated into the study that assess these domains. And we've seen some great improvements in terms of self-efficacy, and especially in terms of accessing the healthcare system. So we see, for example, in the treatment group that participants are much more comfortable communicating with their health providers and asking their providers questions about their disease. And this is an overview of some of our preliminary clinical outcomes to date. We haven't actually seen across the whole group huge improvements in A1C. However, when we've looked at our data of individuals who have A1C above 7, we've seen significant improvements in that group. So this is the entire group. Where we have seen some significant improvements is in mean weight loss and in decreasing BMI. And again, we've seen significant improvements in the treatment group as compared to the control group. So these are some additional program highlights. We've offered over 100 educational sessions taught today, because although it's just 5 sessions over a 6-month period, obviously not just 5 sessions. We offer many, many different sessions to accommodate people's different schedules. We've also integrated several community events as part of the intervention, including things like summer picnics. We have graduation ceremonies where the participants who complete the program are awarded with a certificate, and there's a nice cultural program that's associated with it. We have partnered with the American Diabetes Association and participate in their walks and mobilize community support. And then we've done other things like Family Fun Night and other types of cultural programs to facilitate engagement in the intervention. So our results to date have demonstrated significant reductions in mean weight and BMI, improvements in self-reported physical activity, in food-related behaviors such as portion control and healthier meal preparation, as well as improvements in knowledge related to diabetes management, such as the meaning of hemoglobin A1C, and significant improvements in self-efficacy related to interacting with physicians and traveling to hospitals and doctor's visits. So some of our next steps are to continue building our infrastructure to work in conjunction with community physicians that we see as a really important source of care for this community. In fact, establishing infrastructure to work in conjunction with additional public hospitals in New York City that see a large portion of this community. And as I mentioned, expanding our relationships to faith-based settings. So I'd just like to end with acknowledging our funding agencies who support this work, and special thanks to our coalition and really our community health workers who truly are the ones who are out there delivering this program and really making it work. So thank you.